We launched, in the U.S. Mostly for last year, and we were lucky enough to have REI as our first customer.
That was when I
started to work on the brand. I was like, if one day we can sell to them, that would be fantastic.
Right, and that one day was the first day. It sounds like. From Alda, this is the Protect Your Wild podcast, a show about founders, athletes, and influencers, and how their passions for the environment led to their actions and career paths today. I'm Colin Campbell, and this week I'm having a chat with Guy Lenossier, the founder and CEO of Sala Shoes, a company making some kick-ass shoes out of some crazy materials. They got recycled bottles, they got some crazy algae stuff, and they got organic stuff, all going into some great shoes. And I've done it once again, y'all. I got you a 20% off discount to Sala Shoes. All you gotta do is check out our blog post on them, and the code will be right there. It's at aldalifestyle.com. And yeah, I hope you enjoy his French accent as much as I do. How are you doing, Guy?
Yeah, I'm doing good, thanks.
Fantastic. I appreciate you, first of all, joining me for conversation a little bit. I stumbled across your company and my research of different sustainable brands, and obviously love what you guys are doing. But real quick, could you explain kind of what your mission has been and how Sala Shoes differentiates, from the rest of the pack?
Yeah, sure. So it's been about a year. And the footwear industry is the second largest, polluting industry with textile. And there is really not much going on as far as trying to bring more sustainable products to market. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we launched with the mission to, make a change, make an impact. That's, basically really, what the brand is about. And we are working today with recycled materials, with new innovative materials made out of algae, for example.
The sole and of the your idea, shoe kinda, right?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, the sole, so we are using, we are working with a U.S. supplier called Bloom Foam. And they are going and collecting algae and blooming algae in lakes where they are invasive and killing all the biodiversity. And they collect the algae, dry them up, and then we can mix the powder of algae with other materials to make a foam for insoles and outsoles.
That's awesome. Talk about innovation. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And kind of solving two problems with one company, right? They're helping those lakes out that are getting, choked out by the algae, in addition to supplying you guys with cool materials.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then we use, for the upper of the shoes, we try to use mostly recycled materials. So today, it's recycled plastic bottles, but we are also, looking and trying to figure out the next step and other materials as well. Today, when you look at our new spring 2019 collection, we have about between 5 and 7 plastic bottles per pair.
Oh, wow.
So then we have organic cotton laces and cork. And really the mission is, and our idea is, to always be looking for.
And other advantages, I guess, because to have like a synthetic upper, right? So using the recycled plastic as opposed to going, of course, for example, I'm sure you're aware of Allbirds that has the wool. Kind of wool upper, right? Are there advantages to going with that?
Yeah, I think, it's a different story, different commitment. Mm-hmm. For us, the plastic issue is something we want to, work on. And the wool it's fine. It's not easy to use for every kind of shoe.
Right.
And I know that Allbirds they are also using some other materials as well now, because they found a limitation in that material. Yeah.
Right. I did notice they did release some some with other styles and stuff. Obviously, they've been blowing up lately, and that must be encouraging for you guys, seeing that there's, you know, attention being brought to the kind of footwear industry, and hopefully we'll see you guys doing the same thing here soon. So what is kind of your background, and how did you get into this whole business?
So I'm a, you know, so I'm a French guy. So I grew up in the French Alps, and so I was, you know, always surrounded by mountains.
So lucky.
So by mountains, by you know, we have a lot of lakes, and to me, you know, I've always been passionate about nature and just very concerned about, you know, environment preservation. So I joined after you know, I went and did a business school, and after, you know, after I joined the outdoor industry, because to me that was the you know, the industry that was closest to my passions for sports, but also for nature. And so I worked for a French outdoor group for about 17 years, and but 13 years in Boulder, Colorado. And you know, the more I learn about the environmental impact of the textile and footwear industry, I you know, I really wanted to try to make a change and, you know, make things better. So after a few years, you know, I started to think about ideas and concept, and I could see that on the textile, so on the apparel side, you know, you have a, you know, quite a few brands. I see your Patagonia hat on the screen, but
and
it's like Patagonia. Or Prana, or, you know, some very, very nice cool brands doing a lot of good things on the apparel side. But when I started to look on the footwear side, I just couldn't find any, you know, sustainable brands that I would buy. I mean, you could find some, you know, hippie-ish brands, you know, but you had to be very, very committed to wear these. So, you know, my idea, you know, and I used to buy, you know, surf, skate, you know, brands for like everyday use. So, and I'm like, well, yeah, there is nothing in that kind of world that has a true sustainable story and commitment.
Yeah, so they have really a very Vans-esque kind of look to them. It's it's definitely something that I could see, you know, walking around in a good day, like daily use shoe, right?
So we don't want to, you know, we don't want to do too technical products because the, and in fact, the more technical you go, the more challenging it is to bring to use sustainable materials, because you have a lot of you know, technical needs. But for everyday use, it's you know, where, and that's also where the volume of the business is today. And the volume of the usage is today. So that you know, that's really where we want to focus. My vision is the more shoes and sustainable shoes we'll sell, the less you know, regular shoes would be on the market. So that's you know, and so then we would have a bigger impact. And I didn't talk about our second mission, which is to help some NGOs. And we are focusing starting spring 19, we will be focusing on wildlife preservation. This is something that's, to me, you know, very important. And when we look at numbers today about the loss of biodiversity, it's just crazy. And I don't think we realize how bad this is. And, you know, in the last 40 years, we have lost about 60% of species. And it just we just can't keep going at that rate. So so I want to, you know, invest it, take some of the you know, our money made with the sales to help you know, some people on the ground doing some work to preserve you know, the wildlife.
Is there an organization that you guys have chosen to partner up with that in that effort yet?
So in 2018, so we had three organizations, but it was a little bit too much, we decided to really focus on one organization starting this spring, and we will change organization either every season or every year. Mm-hmm. So the ones we have starting next month is a very small organization based in Kenya, Africa.
Okay.
Because they have had a big drought in Kenya for the last 3-4 years. And so a guy there, was going into the national parks, and he could see a lot of dead wildlife just because of no water. And a year and a half ago, he basically bought a water truck and started to put some water holes places for wildlife to, to come and drink and be able to go through those droughts.
Right.
And so basically we're going to help them. They have, the guy is awesome. He's very sick. In fact, he's going to have, a big surgery very soon. But despite his sickness, he has been very, very committed. So I'm even more happy to, help him.
Right.
And help his efforts. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
Each truck, costs about, $150 each trip. The more money we'll give them, the more trips and they'll be able to make. Yeah, basically.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I didn't even know a organization like that existed. Mm-hmm. But yeah, because of course a lot of these extreme weather changes are kind of a result of our climate change, input and so forth. So. Then when you lose keystone species like the elephants, right, that used to be able to apparently dig down deep for water and get groundwater that would, supply it for the rest of the species. But, we've just about killed all of them off. So,
I was looking at the number, a couple of weeks ago, at the beginning of the, last century, there were about 5 million elephants in Africa.
That's hard to believe now.
Yeah, there are about 300,000 left.
That's unbelievable.
And it just, every year it's going crazy. They said that lions, might be, gone in 20 years.
Man.
And and to me, I have two kids, two daughters. Mm-hmm. I want them to be able to see, wildlife in the wild and alive, so that's really, part of the, big part of our mission. Yeah,
it's definitely one of the biggest issues that with how kind of prominent climate change is in the media and stuff, you don't hear nearly as much about the like mass extinction that we're going through. I feel like that might potentially scare people that aren't very aware that it's happening, right? When you tell them that statistic that 60% of species, has gone extinct, everybody knows with the ecosystem, of course, everything's connected. You have a big web, and when you start removing pieces here, there, and everywhere from that web, it's has kind of almost unknown how big that impact will be on the bigger picture.
Yeah, I think, we talk about, species extinction, but, we are one of them.
Yeah.
So, it's,
true.
we can't live just by ourselves, and, and to me, this is a, big, big subject and projects. And, it's like, I feel, when I talk to people, they don't know what to do. And I'm like, every time, you buy something, you do something, you can vote. It's like a, you can vote for, going in one direction or the other direction.
Right.
And, and for us, for me, Seola, I just want the brand to be, one small element to make a more sustainable world tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly why I like kind of doing this and talking with founders from different sustainable private companies is because, you have control over your impact and where you choose to invest your money, be it in your materials or in the suppliers you work with or the nonprofits you support. And of course, with how crazy American politics is specifically right now, as a voter, you almost feel useless. But as a consumer, you can always support companies or brands that are doing the right thing rather than just the mega brands that everybody knows. So you grew up doing some outdoor sports in the Alps, I presume. What were some of your favorites, and how did that kind of like play into your love for nature? Because I love sports myself, and it's definitely a big part of why I kind of came towards this whole route in sustainability.
Yeah, sure. I grew up, skiing, mountain biking, hiking with my, parents and, siblings. We spent so much time in, just outdoors that, we were just doing a lot of stuff. Yeah. And that's why, when you live in such a, nice environment, for me, it's so key to preserve it. Yeah. And, and I think, we can do it. We just have to act and do things. And, there is really, definitely a matter of, urgency. Mm-hmm. That's why we try to really, do as much as we can. And, our mission with Seola again is to, reduce the the carbon footprint of the shoes every season.
Right.
And we are going to invest in a couple of innovation projects, always with that in mind.
Right.
I'm hoping that there are some other brands already doing some other stuff on the footwear side, and I'm hoping that all together we can really make a big change.
Yeah. Yeah, I've noticed a couple of the bigger brands, Adidas and Nike kind of being the two largest that come to mind, have some models at least within their within their lineups that are sustainability focused, which is a step in the right direction, right?
No, I like very much what Adidas did last year with their Parley, so it's a recycled plastic from the ocean project. And I know that they are committing to less plastic in their collections and stuff like that. So that's great. I think the big challenge for some of the big brands is to integrate and incorporate sustainable manufacturing in their business model, because it definitely has a cost to
it.
Where I'm based, I talked a lot with the people at Salomon. Because their headquarters is just a couple miles from my office.
Oh, okay.
And they have a business model in place, margins in place, and if you have a product that costs $10, but if tomorrow you want to use recycled materials or organic materials, it's going to cost $14, $15, $16, mm-hmm. and it's very difficult for them to keep their retail price and incorporate that extra expense.
Absolutely.
So
do you think I guess the hope is right that as more and more people start not only incorporating these materials into their shoes on the supplier side, but on the consumer side, more people start taking note of those materials, that those costs will go down over the long run, right?
And I think it's a global thing, it's from the production side to the end of the life and to the consumer, and for us step by step we want to also try to incorporate in our strategy and communication about the consumer, right? We are always pushed, and especially with all the sales going on all the time and all that, to buy more,
right?
When you look at what you have, are you there?
Yeah, I think I lost you for a few seconds there. Sorry, could you do you mind repeating that?
Yeah, sure. We want to also not educate. I don't like that word too much, but just show an example of buying right and not buying too much. In the US, but it's true also in other countries. But we are always pushed to buy more.
Right.
We have sales going on all the time, but it's just because of overproduction. what I like to do is really try, you know, for Seola to produce just the quantities we need. And, you know, my goal, and I'm hoping we will be able to reach that pretty quick, is never to have to go on sale. And if we can reach that goal, we can also, you know, think about the next steps, which could be we could even sell our products a little bit cheaper because we will sell them at the margin we need.
Right.
We won't have to take in consideration X percent of products to be able to have to sell on sale, you know, at a lower price.
Right.
To me, you know, I was watching a documentary a few weeks ago and about waste and just over, you know, consumption and production. Mm-hmm. And they were saying that you know, if you look at what's in your closet, about I think it's about 70 or 80% of the stuff you have you never wear.
Yeah, that's pretty true.
So it's a waste of money on our side because, you know, I've done the same because it's just basically money sitting in your closet,
right?
And it just you know, it just stuff we don't need, so why buying it and why producing it? So that's
that is a great point. I never quite considered that all the sales and stuff was more so on the supplier side of just too much product, too much inventory from retailers, right? And they need mm-hmm. to dump it to make space for the next season. So, you know, slash the mm-hmm. prices. And is I'm sure you're aware of like Black Friday in America. Is that something that's like there in France as well, or is that a pretty American kind of idea?
I mean, it's very American. I think the second country that's where it's pretty strong is the UK. In France, it's starting to grow, but it's not, you know, definitely not as big as in the US. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's, looking at a holiday, it's basically a holiday in itself, and it's pretty insane here. So do you guys have kind of plans for, you know, the idea of the circular economy, right? Do you have plans in place for the end of the life cycle for your shoes?
So it's funny, we had meetings with 6 or 7 specialists a couple of weeks ago, and trying to think about the next step, because last year was our first year, and so we kind of put like the basis, you know, of the brand and where we want to go. And when we if you look, in fact, at the carbon footprint of a pair of shoe, the end of the life is it's a very small percentage of
the total impact.
Of the impact.
Yeah.
And about 60-70% comes from the materials, and that's really why I wanted to focus on materials first, because right. this is the easiest and fastest way where we can really make a difference. And today the challenge of the end of life is that there is no recycling, you know, chain in place for shoes.
Right.
So it's a very complex product to recycle because you have a lot of different materials. Mm-hmm. So I do have in mind, and we are starting to think about some options where, you know, if we simplify as much as possible the construction of the shoes, there could be ways to recycle mm-hmm. at the end of the, you know, of the life of the shoe. But it's again, before doing this, in fact, we need to find ways and places where we could recycle them, because today there is just none. Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah, when you look at the components involved in your average shoe, you have you know, it's all over the place between laces, rubber, and then the cushioning, the insole itself.
So we are working on a new on products for next year, and we are going to use quite a lot the knit technology. So the idea of the uppers, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the big advantage of the knit technology is that first you have almost zero material waste, because you basically built the upper exactly in the shape and size that you need.
Right.
So it's you know, it's very interesting, and also it's in terms of construction of the shoe, you can have shoes with just one layer of material on the top. So it's a very simple and so very clean. And I would say, you know, the more simple we can get on footwear production, the cleaner it will be.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm pretty excited to see that because I like the look of the knit uppers as well. I think it's a pretty clean design.
Yeah. And we are also working on a new construction, you know, between the upper and the outsole, where instead of using glue, we are using stitches. Again, you know, that could be one of the first steps to then think about ways to maybe be able at the end of the life of the shoe separate easily the upper from the outsole.
Right.
And we could at least the upper could be recycled pretty easy. The outsole is it's another story and another project, but
yeah, that's pretty sweet. So one question I've always kind of had, given your shoe expertise in looking for hiking boots, for example, the kind of overall impacts of, you know, a leather shoe, which is kind of a natural source, but the tanning process is terrible. The treatment of animals is questionable. But yet you have, you know, companies like Timberland, where I got mine from, that are making at least a lot of efforts in the world of the environment and how they kind of try to make up for, I guess, the impacts of their products versus the like synthetic shoes that, you know, may not or most likely aren't going to be made of the, you know, recycled material and so forth. I was just wondering if you could kind of speak to that a little bit, or how do you go about kind of making your decisions in buying that technical footwear?
Sure. Where should I start? So talking to a few sustainability specialists, it's always better to use recycled materials than even good first hand materials. So it always has a lower environmental impact. Okay. As far as leather goes, we have looked at good sustainable and eco-friendly leather. We couldn't find any that were interesting, or we found a couple, but they were very 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 expensive and more for luxury positioning than what where we want to be. You have more and more brands using natural tanning. Because one of the big challenge of the leather industry is the tanning process where when you use chroma. So I know that brands like Timberland, but quite a lot of other brands now are trying to not to have chroma in the tanning process. But to me, remain the leather, the leather material, which. When we look today at where it's coming from, first animal welfare and conditions is very difficult to have a good grasp on, so I'm not sure about the sourcing.
Right, they're not very transparent about it.
Also the. If you look at the number one reason for deforestation today, it's because of the cattle industry.
Okay.
If you look, in Brazil, which is, they have the biggest rainforest, but they, they destroy it at a crazy rate. And basically the main reason they are doing this is to plant corn to feed cattle. Both for the meat and the leather, needs. And so to me, that's why also, if tomorrow we find good, sourcing leather, we might, use it. But, if we find wool where we can really have a good control on the sourcing again, we might use it. But I would say the least amount of leather we use, the better,
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's good to know. I saw a stat in one of our recent podcast episodes that we did on U.S.'s use of agriculture, and I think it was about 30% of it went to just feeding livestock, whereas about 20% was maybe for actual human consumption. Those stats definitely aren't exact from memory, but the ratio is about there where, you know, we're using about 10% more, I believe, to feed livestock that we're then, you know, eating versus what we're actually using.
No, but livestock and, you know, and then, you know, but the textile and footwear industry is a very, very big user of water as well. You know, I think to do, you know, to make a pair of jeans, I think you need about, 5,000 gallons of water. So it's really, between the, the cotton, and then the, just the treatment for colors and stuff like that. It's definitely, definitely an issue. So, again, for us, we are really at the beginning of the story and the process, and we are, we are going to work this year on a full cycle, full life cycle analysis of our products. Because now that we have products, we can make, we can make it, and it will give us a better idea even of where, our biggest environmental issues are, so that moving forward we can,
prioritize like how to address what.
Yeah, find ways. Do we need to really focus really on recycled materials more? Do we really have to focus on saving water? So that, and basically I want to do that, every couple of years to always improve the process and our products.
Right. That's awesome. Yeah. Those, the constant kind of internal audits, I guess, are essential, I think, to know where the innovation is needed. And, but yeah, obviously you guys, started off the right way, and you're starting from a foundational level that's already far beyond in terms of sustainability and reduction of your carbon footprint, far beyond what most other brands that have launched, if not nearly all of the other brands that have launched in the past year have done. So it really is impressive. So last kind of thing in the businessy world, your distribution model, I guess you guys of course do online sales, but are you in any retailers, or what is kind of your approach to building the awareness and getting the shoes in front of people to to let them know they have the choice to go with something better or something less impactful to the environment?
We launched the brand like I said earlier, early 2018, and we really focus, even if I'm based in France now, but I know the US market a lot more than the European market. So we launched in the US mostly for last year, and we were lucky enough to have REI as our first customer. When I started to work on the brand, I was like, if one day we can sell to them, that would be fantastic.
That one day was the first day, it sounds like.
So that was an interesting challenge, because you can't mess up and from the get-go, but it was we had some good success with them, and we are growing to more stores this year. We have opened, quite a few smaller independent accounts as well. We are working with a website called Huckberry.
Oh yeah, I've heard of Huckberry.
Yeah, it's a very nice website. Very, outdoor, trendy outdoor, I would say.
And then
we started to open some stores in Canada as well, where you have Mountain Equipment Co-op, which is, kind of the same as REI, but for Canada. We're starting to make some good progress on the distribution.
Yeah, it sounds like some good retail partners to have, especially, getting REI so early on is huge. And maintaining that relationship, and hopefully I'll see you guys. You said you're in the flagship store in Denver, I believe, right?
Yeah, we are in Denver, in Seattle, in Portland, you know, on the in New York. Last year we had about 10 stores. This year we're going to go to about 40 stores.
Nice.
And then we have EMS on the East Coast. Also, we're going to ship in a couple of weeks for the first time. We have some good partners. We try to pick the right partners who, first fit the products, of course, but also understand and want to change their, sustainable approach. REI is very, very dedicated and committed to, pushing the manufacturers, the brands to, make things better.
Yeah.
So I'm really, really happy to be in their stores for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I'm going to pick a pair up, what way kind of benefits Saula the most? Because I think, if you support from the retailer side, right, then they're going to want to order more and maintain that partnership with you guys. Mm-hmm. But probably on a per pair of shoes basis, the margins benefit you almost to buy directly from your website, right?
To me the website is more like, because we are not in a lot of places yet, so it's more for people who hear from the brand, who are in places where you don't have stores selling Saula that you can buy. In Boulder, we have a Boulder Running Company. We have not Boulder Running Company. We have a pedestrian shop, for example.
Okay.
We have Jack's Outdoors. They have the shoes. So, nice. I'd rather, help and, push the shoes through their stores than directly on our website.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha. Good to know. So now I want to, if we can, do a little game or a little segment to kind of break it up that is going to be a would you rather. So have you heard of this game?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to kind of lay out, two different scenarios or things to pick from. And I kind of want to hear which one you'd rather choose. And then, if you could walk me through your decision-making process on that. So the first one I got, which kind of ties directly into a question I asked earlier, but would you rather buy all organic and natural materials, so things from plants and animals, or all recycled / upcycled synthetic materials?
I think I would go with recycled, and upcycled materials and organic.
True.
Yeah.
I guess they're like you're saying. There's so much plastics and stuff that are already out there that we need to kind of take advantage of and do something with that.
On the organic aspect, you have a. I think organic cotton for us, it's not something we want to use because it's, requires a lot of water.
Right.
But we have plants like hemp
or, is a great alternative,
or linen, right. Also. Those are, options that we could, look at for the future. Yeah.
Right. It's like it's crazy because the plants themselves are much more beneficial to, not only reduction water use, but I believe also the soil and how it. Mm-hmm. I think hemp specifically was one that is a lot easier on the soil than cotton, but yet
it
cotton
doesn't require
is still
a lot
the most
of
popular. Mm-hmm. Sweet. So the next scenario I got here, we got three total. The next one is, would you rather see the world's electricity demands met by exclusively wind, solar, and geothermal means, or see electricity demands met exclusively by nuclear energy? Because I know France does a lot of nuclear, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, of course, I would, rather see the sun and wind, wind energy. I think there is no good option for, at a high scale today. But I definitely, think that, in the next 10 years, we're going to see a lot of changes. And, France is doing a lot of nuclear electricity. And, it's it's I would say it's a clean energy when you have no problem, mm-hmm. but there's a big risk if you have a problem. So right. you know, it's not a cut and dry. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. In the U.S., we have so many, I think, fault zones that are really close to nuclear facilities, which of course isn't mm-hmm. a great combination to have there.
So you know, so I think you know, there is a lot of you know, I'm sure we're going to see really a lot of changes in the next 10-20 years. You know, I know that, you know, you have you know, energy that can come from the ocean, you know, with the waves and currents.
Right, that's stuff, you
know.
Yeah,
so, you know, I think that one of the challenges is to store the energy and the electricity today. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, I'm sure Elon Musk will find, you know, something new pretty soon. Yeah,
yeah, there's so much room for innovation in that space. And I think it's going to be, you know, an efficiency game. We got the concepts there, but now, you know, how efficient can we be in turning those sources of energy, right, and converting them into electricity, and then of course storing that to levels that are safe enough where, if you know, there's natural disasters or whatever, that you can rely on the batteries that you have and stuff.
Yeah, but I also think that we can you know, because today we use a lot of energy, you know, electricity and all those, and again, we can all you know, make a small you know, small change, you know, at our level by, you know, turning the lights off, you know, just because it's really not much. But when you, you know, if you have billions of people doing the same stuff, it's a huge change. Yeah. And hold on one second. I'm just going to grab something because my wife showed me something she received this morning.
Okay.
And Wade said, let's see.
Are you, I don't know, can you hear my bird going, talking
to
himself?
I can hear bird, yes. Okay. Yeah.
Hopefully it's not coming through too loud.
No, it's okay for me.
On, so it's difficult to tell.
Yeah. So, my wife, she sent me, she's you know, she receives sentences from an app called Action for Happiness every day.
Okay.
And today's sentence was, small acts, when multiplied by millions of people, can transform the world.
There you go. That ties in perfectly.
Yeah, and I think that's true. So that's what I tell all my friends, all the people I work for. I'm like, you know, every time you do something, just, you know, just take 1 second to think, you know, if you could do it differently or don't do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we start to all think, you know, every day, you know, this way, then we can make a big change. Yeah,
yeah, reduction, like you said, is always the first step. You know, even if you have the, you know, $1 million home here in Boulder, and you got the newest solar panels up and the newest, you know, means to make it more sustainable, the best thing you can always start out with is reducing your consumption of everything, you know, water, electricity, products, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Buy food that you're going to buy, not that you're going to throw away.
Right. You know? Food's a big one.
So 3 years ago, when we moved back from the US to France, obviously we had a much smaller place to live in France than in the US.
Yeah.
And then, also for 3 months, because our, you know, all our stuff was on a container ship from the US to France, we basically, my wife and two daughters and I, we lived with 4 suitcases for 3 months.
Nice.
And we had one of them was toys for the girls, and they didn't open it once.
use a whole suitcase for toys, and there you go. They don't even look at it.
And that's how you realize that. I mean, we can live with a lot less stuff than we had. In fact,
absolutely. Yeah, that's a good lesson to learn. I've been personally trying to each year, essentially going through, doing kind of like a personal audit, right? And seeing in my closet what I don't use and what I can donate. You know, obviously there's people in need of that secondhand stuff. There's a demand for it. And I, as much as I can, if I am going to buy something new, like, you know, moving from Florida to Colorado, I had to get some jackets, right? I try to go to those thrift shops and stuff around here. And that's always the best kind of first line of of shopping, I think, is to look used in that way. So my last question here for the would you rather is, would you rather undergo a water shortage in France or a power shortage where you're limited to just using enough to meet your need?
Power shortage for sure.
Yeah,
water is life, and we can deal with no power. Yeah.
So there recently were, how informed or what have you on that, but, you know, blowing up in the U.S.'s news was the protests and so forth in France, and if I understood, it had to do with some kind of energy taxes or...
Yeah, it all started. They wanted to raise the price of gas to have a special tax to invest in new energy. But gas is already very expensive,
right.
So a lot of people with low income said, "Okay, that's enough. We have, you know, there are a lot of taxes here already," and that's, you know, basically how it's all movement started. Yeah. But which is good because it made the government react. They are going through a 3-month process where you have a lot of public debates and meetings, you know, all around the country, and people can. And in fact, I'm going to go to one tomorrow night.
Nice.
Where you basically can, you know, and there are 4 topics. One of them is the environment, but you have, just general economy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can, you know, basically say what you would like, and, you know, change that you would like to see, and then they're gonna just basically collect all the data and just see, you know, I'm hoping they would make changes in the next steps. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you think it was kind of ultimately, and I don't mean to dive too much into politics, but
mm-hmm.
There's. You know, this new kind of Green New Deal resolution that came out in the U.S. and
mm-hmm.
there's a similar response of essentially that it was too much, trying to do too much too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes I feel like when governments do that, they can end up kind of pushing away people from the idea of sustainable measures, even though mm-hmm. we do, you know, need to act fast, I would argue, but...
Mm-hmm.
Do you kind of think that that tax policy and the response that came from it is ultimately going to be like beneficial to France, or has it just caused kind of more outrage or more problems than it will solve?
Well, I think that tax was just the thing that started the whole movement, but it's just a small portion. You know, I think it was a lot more complex, and just people have a, you know, work full time, but they have a hard time, you know, joining the you know, basically paying, you know, all their bills and, you know, and living basically.
Yeah.
So you know, but for me, you know, the environment, I don't think we realize really the issue and the urgency where, you know, that we have to solve and try to solve the problem and make things better. And, you know, I was, you know, talking to a guy a few weeks ago, and, you know, we were talking about the fact that you have, you know, the government sometimes has to impose stuff to, you know, to people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, unfortunately, that's very often the only way to get stuff done. And when you look in the past, that's you know, for example, you know, having to wear to have your seatbelt while, you know, driving now.
Right.
You know, 30 years ago, you didn't have to. And you know, I don't think, you know, I think if the government would have said, yeah, just wear your seatbelts, and you know, I don't think a lot of people would today. But you know, by enforcing this measure, basically, it saved a lot of lives, and it forced people to do it. And I think on the environmental side, that's really something that we need to do as well. And just need give no option and just do new things and better things. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I appreciate that perspective. I just find, you know, a lot of times in the U.S., people can get so. you know, locked into our own politics and think that the U.S. is the world, right? And and I like to try to, you know, if I can, bring in that outside perspective and hopefully give some understanding of what's going on elsewhere.
But the, you know, the U.S. is you know, it's a big part of, it's a big part of the world. It's a big country. It's a very powerful country, and you know, I loved living there, and we might be moving back soon, so we'll see. But we and I think you know, if you look at states like California or, you know, or Colorado and all that, so you know, I think at the local level, you know, people can make you know, take measures, you know, push you know, things in the right direction. It's you know, I always remember, like, I think 10 years ago or even more, maybe 15 years ago, my dad went to a conference in Montreal, Canada, and the other guy, we came to talk, and he was a scientist, and he was explaining that you know, global warming and climate change is it's something very difficult for humans because it's a slow death.
It goes
slow, and we are very good at reacting at catastrophes, you know, hurricanes, you know, stuff like that. But when it's a slow process, we just get used to these new things. And it's a very difficult in our mind to realize that maybe soon we will hit a wall and it might be too late.
It's like the death by a thousand paper cuts or whatever that old saying is, right? Awesome. So to kind of start to close it out here, we got a couple questions that I like to ask all of our guests, because we always seem to get interesting and you know, unique responses from them. But starting out, how do you go about explaining the concept of sustainability to a toddler? It sounds like your daughters are pretty young, given their suitcase of toys. So how do you kind of go about explaining or teaching them sustainability?
I just, you know, talk to them, you know, I mean, we, you know, just recycling, you know, we recycle, you know, we, you know, we, I tell them to buy less stuff, you know, and, you know, we, you know, we, you know, I'm really trying to talk to them about, you know, not throwing stuff away, you know, that trash needs to go in the trash, not on the ground, you know, just basic stuff. And, and then, you know, we try to, you know, talk to them about, you know, why, you know, organic products are better than, you know, than, you know, just regular products. And it's just an everyday, you know, discussion, I would say.
So a combo of kind of the teach by example, right? And it being a part of their lives there. And then in addition to kind of talking with them and having a... a verbal kind of understanding. That's
Great. We just bought our oldest daughter, she's 11, a book about the life of the trees.
Nice.
And it's a very easy book for kids, and where it just you know, explain how they interact, you know, how, you know, and how important they are, and but just to be in a fun way. I think, you know, it's, but it's the same for adults. You know, I think when we talk about these topics, it has to be fun. I mean, positive, fun. You know, creative. You know, I hate, you know, to blame people and say, you know, don't do stuff like this or don't do stuff like that.
Instead, but let's do this and let's do that and take the positive active approach.
Yeah, we just bought two hives. We're gonna
beehives?
Nice,
that's cool.
So, you know, I'm going to try to do it with my daughters starting this spring. And, you know, and then basically it will, you know, bring some new discussions about, you know, bees, of course, but insects and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Right. I love it. Hopefully if there's any parents listening, they can kind of take that approach too. I think that sounds really effective. So the next one I got here is, what do you think the most important issue the most important issue that we as a you know, globe, I guess, that the Earth is facing in terms of sustainability right now.
I mean, to me, it's climate change. You know, we're gonna see drastic changes in you know, in our climate. We're gonna see droughts. We're gonna see extreme cold more often. And you know, I know that in the U.S., some people don't believe in climate change. And
that's insane.
You know, but there have always been, you know, climate change. The challenge today is really how fast it's happening. If right. When it's happening over, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of years, you know, species, including ourselves, have time to adjust.
Adapt,
yeah. And we, you know, today the species just can't adapt to all these new, you know, climate challenges. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. Cool. I try to take the approach, if, you know, I do come across somebody or what have you that doesn't believe in climate change, I usually try to point things in the direction of, like, look, whether you think it's humans' fault or not, this, like, the climate is changing. Like, there is, you know, empirical evidence that this is happening. If you think we're contributing it to it or not, you know, that's fine. But you can at least help solve the problem. Even if you don't think it's our fault, right? We can still at least have control or have enough impact to try to solve the problem.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think you know, we can, you know, I'm not a scientist, and, you know, so, you know, I'm not going to be able to argue with people who don't believe in this. But my vision is just, you know, just try to do things better and just common sense. You know, it makes more sense, I think, not to, you know, put, like, you know, chemicals in the ground than not to put chemicals in the ground.
All right.
So, you know, it's just, you know, stuff like this where, you know, I live not too far from Chamonix in France, where, you know, it's the Mont Blanc. It's that's the highest peak. And you have there is a glacier that until like 20 years ago, it was coming down almost all the way to the city. And in 20 years, it's now it's about a mile higher than it was 20 years ago. And it's a very, you know, when you go there and you see the differences, it's just crazy.
Yeah, it hits you immediately if you're familiar with the area. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
So another one, what are some things that you're kind of working on in your own life to be more sustainable? Because I think sometimes people get the picture that, you know, people that are you're either like have a sustainable lifestyle or you don't. Whereas, you know, with behaviors and humans, it's kind of a process, and we're all kind of a work in progress, right? So what are some things that you're kind of imperfect on, so to speak, and that you're working on in your own life?
Yeah. Well, I thought I was perfect, but maybe not. Yeah. No. You know, I'm far from being perfect, and I'm far from being the most sustainable guy on the planet. We of course recycle. We try to take our bikes, you know, as much as we can, then, you know, when we go to grocery stores, we bring our own bags. We don't use plastic bags anymore. You know, that kind of stuff. I would say we are very good at food management, as far as, you know, we throw away almost zero food.
That's awesome.
We are definitely buying a lot less apparel, shoes, and, you know, that kind of stuff than before. And when we do, we try to buy secondhand stuff. My wife, there's an app called Vinted, and my wife buys stuff, you know, it's all used. That's basically what we try to do. And we bought a book called Zero Waste Family. And we try to we make our own shampoo, just small things that, again, if we are millions of doing that, you know, I think the planet would be a lot healthier. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That adds up to a huge impact.
That's awesome. And, but we want to live a normal life, a modern life, trying to do the best we can. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to, part of our kind of mission, I guess, is to kill the misconceptions about people who, you know, make it a focus to be sustainable. You know, we're not I guess that conception might be a bunch of kind of dirty tree huggers or something, right? Don't clean themselves at all, because then you have to use a product, or that don't, you know, do normal things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully people get that you can be, you know, lead a pretty normal life, but do a lot of these really, really practical things to.
Yeah. I showered this morning, and you know, it's okay. We bought, you know, 2 months ago, we bought a new shower head that basically uses 50% less water than our you know, just regular shower head.
Yeah.
And we were, you know, so we took a bucket because I wanted to show my daughters, and we basically had waters like for, you know, we saw how much time it would take with both options to. Fill up the bucket, and it was more than 50% you know, of water saved. So
yeah, and what did that cost you, like $15 or so, or euro, I suppose?
So the cost was, you know, about $40, so it's it's expensive for a shower head, but I think we're gonna save, you know, especially with two girls, we're gonna save so much water. You know, I think it's gonna pay off pretty quick.
Yeah, you don't see shower heads breaking too often. You can usually use them for years and years. That's awesome. Yeah, basic things like that. You can keep an eye out. You're still showering, but just by taking a look at the head of the shower that you use, it immediately cuts your water use in half. So do you have a kind of any final messages here that you'd like to maybe give to either inspire people or what have you, and things that you want to plug to allow people to help support you and Saola and your mission?
I think, you know, first of all, I would say thank you for the time, but you know, it's you know, I think we are, you know, the planet, it's a big planet, but it's not that big. You know, we are all in this together. And, you know, basically the more, you know, sustainable approach that you can have, you know, the better. And with Saola, again, you know, we are really at the beginning of the brand and the story, but we have clear mission and a clear vision. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, it's really, really hard to launch a brand. I didn't expect it to be that hard. And, you know, every time I, you know, we have tough days, we, you know, I just think about, you know, why we are doing this. You know, I think about, you know, the sustainable manufacturing and the NGOs we're going to be able to help. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for us, you know, the more shoes we can sell and have people wear, the bigger impact we will have. And that's really, you know, our main mission. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, we're pulling for you. I hope to see Saola blowing up in the next couple of years here. And, you know, that'll put your innovations and your ability to continue to improve the product and the process and the hyperdrive, right?
Yeah. So we will be launching our new website on March 12th. So there will be quite a lot of new products, hopefully people will like them. Yeah.
Awesome. So that's saolashoes.com, right? Saola shoes.com. You can also see a good video you guys have there on your kind of origins. Obviously, if you just listen to the episode, you probably have a good idea about what's going on. You guys have the usual Instagram and social media and so forth?
Yes, of course.
And that is that also Saola Shoes?
It's Saola Shoes, yeah, for both.
Saola Shoes, perfect. So yeah, go give them a follow, check out their products. The mission is there. The focus on both materials and giving back is the right balance approach that the brands of tomorrow, so to speak, need to take. And, you know, with your help, Guy and Saola Shoes will grow and, you know, be successful. So I encourage you guys to check them out. And with that, Guy, again, thanks again for, you know, spending some time and having this conversation with me. I've learned a lot, and hopefully those listening have learned a lot and have a better appreciation for your mission and what you're doing to try to innovate in the apparel and specifically the footwear industry. So thank you, and remember, everyone, to protect your wild.
Yeah, thank you.
So thanks again for listening to yet another episode of the Protect Your Wild podcast. Remember, the best thing that you can do for us is to please subscribe and leave us a review. That'll help some other people find it. Also, check out our Instagram at OutTheLifestyle and our amazing blog at OutTheLifestyle.com. Till next week.